Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thanks for listening to the Prime Time with Isaac and Suk podcast. Brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
What it do? Welcome in to a recorded yet spectacular edition of Primetime. Another COVID cast, but this one is a best of because for some reason we've been given the day off by our new boss. Here's what's coming up. You will hear us discuss the Jordan Love draft pick, cereal combos, great question posed by the great Mike Lynch, failing at sports radio, we're good at that, East Coast bias, and you'll even hear a little bit about our bank bro story and haberdashery. But we start with Jason Sukanik ignoring all COVID laws and going to a party and reporting back of a very serious booze faux pas.
Although I saw something this weekend, and there's only one man that's going to be able to sort this out. I saw the moment I saw it, I knew that I had to take this to the honorable I. Everett Ropp, because I believe I saw one of the more egregious, let's call it social gathering faux pas, I've ever witnessed.
And you told me about this before the show.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure how bad it is. It's bad, but I'm not sure if it's the worst, like you're selling it.
I thought it was ridiculous.
And Suk is fabricating? No.
And people were like, are you going to talk about this? I said, right off the get-go, I'm taking it to one Isaac Ropp. I'm taking it to one I. Everett Ropp.
You will be the true judge and arbiter, as you normally are.
I need an official ruling because this man left the social gathering before I could properly shame him. And people were like, boy, does he deserve to be shamed? And I said, I think he does.
I think so, if you ask, I haven't heard any of the facts yet of the case.
Yeah.
I think if you're asking that question, the answer is typically yes.
Yes, absolutely he should be shamed.
Although most people at the social gathering did not agree that he should have been shamed, right?
Until I pointed it out, and then everyone was like, oh, man. And then
be very persuasive.
Mike was the same way. Mike tried to defend this sort of egregious behavior. And my thing is, there's rules. This isn't Vietnam. There's rules of society that we have to live by. And by the end of our conversation, Mike had come around to my side, as most of the gathering had.
Well, you're very persuasive.
You're a good attorney.
Well, this is, I feel like I've
You're especially good in the courtroom.
I also wasn't there, so I feel like you could be selling it any way you want.
I feel like I've got damning evidence here against this individual. And he will remain nameless, but he knows who he is. He knows. So let me lay out what happened. So we had it was a birthday social gathering out at Edgefield.
Wait, hold on. Let me get my fart gavel.
Yes.
Court is in session. The Honorable I. Everett Ropp presides. Please stand and stay standing.
So it is a birthday function out at the little par three out there at Edgefield.
Okay. I like that course. That's fun.
And it's a nice birthday. You know, it's pretty lighthearted, right? You can have some beverages out there.
Anybody taking anything seriously out there has got issues.
Exactly. So it's a fun.
I love Edgefield.
It's a fun time. It's like $20 to go out and play. By the way, the COVID police, the neighbors, boy, they were out in force. kept calling and complaining at various.
Wait. What?
The neighbors, like the houses up
there.
Yeah,
they live up on the top.
Oh, yeah, they were calling down and lobbing complaints left and right. Because.
So have you officially just.
No, forgotten
that we're in a global pandemic?
No, or? we were actually trying to do the whole social distance thing, right?
And according to the neighbors.
No, not according to the neighbors.
Word got back to my chambers over the weekend.
Yeah, the neighbors were like, ah. So we found out later on that, and I don't even know if it was necessarily us, but we got towards the end and the people were like, hey, can you try to just make sure you're, you know, following, because we're getting complaints from the neighbors we have for like the last week.
Was it busy out there?
I wouldn't say busy, but there was a handful of people out there. But the neighbors weren't happy about it. But I digress. I don't want to get off course. So it was for an individual's birthday. What did he ask for his birthday? He wanted booze for starting a liquor cabinet. So that was, you know, simple gift. And so then afterwards, we were convening at one Jason Quick's house. And there would be after dinner drinks and maybe some pizzas ordered and, you know, what have you.
How many people?
Oh, let's 10. Because again, got to keep within social gathering rules.
You're lying.
No, it's very small.
The court thinks you're lying.
Very small social gathering. So we arrive after the fun and hygiene.
But I'm going to let that go.
At Edgefield. And we end up at Quick's house, right? Beverages are being consumed. Cigars are having their time. Everyone's outdoor. We're social distancing. Good times are being had.
Cigars are having their time?
They are.
I feel like you were thinking of ways to say that, and it was all sexual, so you said having their time.
So,
yeah, Quick's got a party house.
Yeah, great, great place. A little ping pong.
Good hosting place,
right? So everyone brought a bottle of something to drink, okay? So you bring something for the birthday boy and something for the party. And standard stuff, right?
Separate.
Yeah, because
these are separate
things, right? So one's going to the birthday boy. Everyone else pretty much just bringing a bottle of whatever, right? Like we bought a bottle of like Four Roses. You know, you got a bottle of Jameson, you get some vodka, whatever. So everyone's bringing a bottle. And then Quick's got his normal. He's got an impressive little home bar, right? So beverages are being had. Man shows up. Do not know this man. First time. Seemed nice enough.
Was he there? Pre-funk or
no?
This is post-funk.
This is post.
So he only shows up.
He only shows
after the party.
Yes, so
the party is the golf.
Is the golf? He shows.
This
up.
Is a hey. Let's just keep it going.
Sure.
COVID be damned.
Yes. So he rolls in with a bottle of. I have never heard of this before. Have you heard of Kentucky Owl?
Kentucky Owl?
Yes.
No.
Sounds fake.
Nor have I. Didn't know what Kentucky Owl was bringing to the table. So he says he's telling everyone about this Kentucky Owl. And I'm like, whatever.
Go out.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
Exactly. And I did not know this, right? So he's pouring little bits of everyone of this Kentucky Owl and saying, hey, you should try this. Took a sip of it, thought it was pretty good. And then the bottle gets put in the middle where all the other booze is, right? So now it is.
I already know what's going to happen. Can I predict?
No, just.
Okay.
Bear with
you're
me.
Probably going to predict correctly, so let's just let him
we
tell
all
the story.
Can see this coming. Okay.
So
right.
we go through this, and he puts it down on the table. I am not aware of the time that the Kentucky Owl is $200 a bottle.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here. Now, there's a table where there are gifts, like they're wrapped as gifts, they're just.
No, it's just it's
what you want. It's a bring your own.
Yes. And table it is mingled with the booze and the food that is being consumed by everyone at the social gathering.
Yeah.
Right? So. Again, not aware of what's happening, I pour myself a nice glass of Kentucky Owl.
How many fingers?
Let's go 4, okay? Nice stiff drink, 3 to 4.
Damn.
Wasn't aware.
That's almost a full glass there, sir.
So someone is like, hey, I think he's only giving out little sips of that. And I was like, what? They're like, well, that's really expensive. And I said, I've never heard of it. I said, it's pretty good. And so then they're like, yeah, I think he was just like, you know, giving little sips. And I said, well, you don't put it amongst the other beverages. And like, if you put that amongst the other beverages that everyone is openly sampling from, that becomes a communal beverage. But at that point, I did not pour myself another glass. I was like, fine, you know, I had it. Let everyone else have some. No big deal. By the way, there's still like 3/4 of a bottle left.
So he just popped the bottle for this party?
Yes. He brought it and displayed it to everyone and wanted everyone to know that he had brought the Kentucky Owl. And then once I realized it was an expensive bottle, I was like, okay, that makes sense. Because he let everyone know. That this is a special bottle. I'm like, all right, Kentucky Owl. Never heard of it. No one had. But it's a high-end beverage, like $200 a bottle.
This says 105.
105?
Yeah, but there's different.
Yeah, different
types.
Types. So anyway, this is not the problem that I have with it. So the party winds down, and like I said, it wasn't really a party. People were there for maybe a half hour, wished him a happy birthday, and then Ken went on their way. So it's down to like maybe six or seven people, and someone says, hey, let's order some pizza. Great. Everyone's hungry. Order pizza for who's ever left. Go inside. Pizza arrives. And I'm like, hey, did anyone have any of that Kentucky Owl? And people were like, oh, yeah, it was pretty good. I didn't get some or whatever. And I said, well, let me pour you a glass. Now I start looking around. Guess what's gone?
The Kentucky Owl.
The Kentucky Owl. Someone was like, wait, did everyone drink that? I'm like, no. That thing was like three quarters to half full. And everyone was like, wait, did he take it with him? Yes, he did.
He took it back.
He took it back. And at that moment, I say that is one of the more egregious things I've ever seen at a party or a social gathering. That would be like if I ordered the pizza. If I said, hey, everyone gets a slice, by the way, I'm packing the rest up and I'm taking it home with me when I leave. You can't do that. When you bring a bottle for a party, the bottle stays at the party. If you bring a cake, that's the cake's part. That party now owns the cake. If you don't get to eat that cake, you don't get to take it home. It is what has been brought.
Unless offered to you at the end.
Yes. You can't bring a bottle of booze for a party and then when you leave, repack it and take it with you.
Well, would you like me to rule now?
I would like you to rule now.
Because that's an easy ruling.
Yes.
And I am ruling. I've already heard all. Is there anything else you'd like to submit to the court?
No. Just that I was beyond about this. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a George Costanza taking the marble rye home because they didn't take it out.
So in the case of Jason Sukanik calling out Party Douche.
Yes.
I rule in favor of Jason Sukanik.
Thank you.
And it's not close.
Am I? Exactly.
It's not close.
Now, the only thing I will say is I feel like you are exaggerating the strength of the offense. You're saying this is the worst party foul you've ever seen.
This is...
That is a pretty, pretty big
you
statement.
You brought...
Yeah, he's trying to sell it to you.
You brought a bottle.
I feel like he needs to try to sell it. I don't know why he thinks he needs to try to sell it. I could see this coming from a mile away when you first started. When I was going to interrupt you and say, yeah. Can I predict what's going to happen? That's exactly what I knew was going to happen. And the whole time I'm like, you can't do that. You don't do that.
No.
You don't.
You can't bring a high-end bottle to try to impress everyone being a big swinging D. And then when you leave, you take it back.
I think the only thing he could have done to allow him to take it back was he could give everyone a sip and then he goes and puts it back in his car. He wasn't bringing it to the party. He was bringing it to be a big swinging D and then brought it back to his car. But once you put it on the communal table, it's the party's drink now.
Or right? if you want to share... If you want to share it at a party. So it wasn't a gift.
No.
He just was, hey, I want you guys to try this. Okay, so it wasn't a gift. I think what you do in that instance is you this may sound weird, but you leave part of the bottle at home. Like, seriously, like if you only want people to taste it, just pour some in another canister.
A carafe.
Or pour out samples. A decanter, whatever, and take that over.
Yeah.
And say, hey, this is great whiskey. You guys should try this. I wanted you guys to try it, but don't take the whole bottle. Once it's there, you're right. I mean, you can take it back, and some people will. That's a chintzy move. Come on, man. It's a party. And the expectation is you never show up to someone's house empty-handed.
No.
And he did.
Well, I mean...
He did. Without that bottle, he showed up empty-handed, right?
So I suppose you could say he left full-handed.
Another piece of evidence, or another key piece of this is, did he bring something else?
No.
Because if he brought something else that shows all of you that he did contribute to the soiree...
Sure.
That makes him taking the bottle back a little more palatable, but still, you just don't... I mean, come on.
No.
Nobody does that.
No.
At the same time... I don't know how many people bring a bottle of really, really nice whiskey for everyone to try, you know? So that's kind of on you. Like, if you walk in the door, you cross that threshold with that bottle. I mean, I also think, like, let's say this. Let's say he came in with the Kentucky Owl.
Yeah.
And he sits down and he starts drinking his Kentucky Owl. You know, that's fine. You bring stuff that you want to drink, right?
Yeah.
That's how parties work sometimes. Even then, I don't know that you leave it. Do you know what I mean?
You don't leave it.
I don't know that you take it with. Yeah.
That's all.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. It's
even then, because when you show up to that party with something that you have brought,
regardless of what it is,
it stays. It's a courtesy.
Yes, it belongs to the party at that point.
Doesn't mean you can't consume it.
And who's ever hosting the party gets the residuals, unless at the very end they say, "Hey, I don't want this. Someone pack this up."
What he should have done was polished off the Kentucky Owl.
Yes,
broke the bottle over his head, flipped the double bird to you guys, and walked out the door.
There you go. I just feel like
I waited until the end, and at the end, party host says, "Hey, you know, take what you want home." He takes his bottle back.
Sure.
Yes. That's an invitation. Take what you want home. I bet that wasn't said.
No. This is it right here. This is what a high schooler pulls off when the booze is hard to get. Yeah. You can't.
Oh, the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're under 22, 23, 24, probably 25. When you're under 25.
Yeah.
I get it. Cause you're pinching pennies and this guy, a friend of Jason Quick's,
apparently he's
probably a billionaire.
Well, he's doing very well. And that was the thing. People were like,
"I think I know this guy."
People were like, "He's doing very well. He's kind of a highfalutin guy." And if you're highfalutin,
then that makes it all the worse.
That makes it even worse.
All the worse.
Yes. You can't show up dazzling somebody with something and then be like, "Yeah, I'm taking it back."
Tell you what, that's not a tough one.
No. I needed to take it before the honorable lie of it, Rob, to find out if I indeed was wrong.
You were right.
Because I was getting some blowback from some people that were like, I think because he's a nice guy, I think people were trying to give him a pass. Well, and I was like, hey,
people get defensive at first and then they start thinking about it and they realize, you know, that's kind of how it works. It takes time. People got to work through things.
He's like, maybe I'm wrong. But there was one man I knew that could rule on this. Well, yeah. And there you go.
Yeah, this guy. Yeah, the honorable. You're welcome.
Yeah.
This text says he wanted to look like a baller and then reneged.
Yeah, you can't.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can't have both. It's a baller move to bring over the Kentucky Owl and
share
it. It's an equally baller move to leave it. It's a total douche move to take it after you've already presented it.
Yes. And maybe now through this, he learned a lesson. Maybe now next time, don't do that.
Dieter is in and says that maybe he saw you do the four-finger pour and was like, "Nope, nope, 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 nope. I'm bringing this home with me. It's too much whiskey to go down the gullet of a four-finger pour."
Suk to get his money's worth out of it. He's like, "Wow, it's a $200 bottle of whiskey. I'll have four or five fingers."
I had no idea.
And then you went in for more, but then it was gone.
No, I didn't.
You offered more up to the rest of the party.
Well, at the end, I was like, "Hey, man, did anyone try that?" I had no idea. To be honest with you, when it first got brought out, I thought it was like wild turkey or something. I was like, Kentucky Owl. It didn't look, you know, I was like, "What?" And then some woman was, you know, correctly pointed out, "Hey, man, this is kind of high-end stuff." I was like, "Oh, geez."
Well, all right. Our work is done here.
All right. Thanks for coming.
We have solved another problem.
It's what we do.
Another world issue.
Look, we tackle the things that other people are afraid to.
You're listening to a best of edition of Primetime here on 1080 The Fan. More for you after the break.
Primetime with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in a best of edition Primetime. Coming up here in this segment, we talk about Roger Goodell's basement. I will say there's not many positive things about this whole COVID thing that we've all been dealing with the last couple months, but the one positive is getting to look inside celebrities' homes. It is the most fascinating part of this whole thing, and this year in the NFL draft, I think we got one of the more interesting looks that we've seen throughout this whole thing is the NFL draft was conducted live from Roger Goodell's basement. Now, it's not like Rob's sex dungeon that he has in his basement or anything like that, but we assumed that there would be many leather-bound books. There'd probably be some NFL paraphernalia, a lot of rich mahogany wood. Anyway, it was pretty cool, and in this segment here, we delve into exactly what Roger Goodell had going on down in his basement. Hope you guys enjoy it.
So anyway, top of the stairs, nice wooden spiral staircase down to the basement. He calls it the man cave.
Yeah. Can I tell you that I'm over the man cave thing?
Yeah, that's an outdated term.
Sure, it's just
that's like saying cool cats and kittens. It's over.
I'm gonna show you my man cave. All right, there.
So it's all, you know, there's wires and cameras and screens and stuff.
Lots of hardware.
You know, it's a nice basement. Mm-hmm. It's not very big.
That's what she said.
It looks like a damn nice chair that he sits in. It's not a recliner, though. It's a leather chair with an ottoman.
With an ottoman. I'll tell you, that was the highlight. To me, if you're going to have a basement lair.
And he's got an NFL pillow on it.
If you will. To me, the chair makes or breaks the room, right? Because you're going down there to relax, hang out, maybe get a cigar, watch something, get into some brown.
I don't know if it makes or breaks a room. I think it's important for the guy. The wife has nothing to do with anything going on down there.
No.
That's his space.
Yes.
And so the chair is, I don't care what it looks like. If that thing is comfortable and you've been watching football in that thing for 30 years, that's what it's about.
But that's my point.
And that's what he said. He said he's been watching football in it for 30 years.
And it looks like it's worn. That is not some fancy brand new chair. That thing has some ass grooves in it. And good for him. But I contend that if you have a man space in whatever room you want to call that, the chair to me makes or breaks the room. Because if you don't have something down there that's comfortable, then what the hell's the point of having the room? You gotta have something that fits the space and that you're ultimately comfortable in.
So he's got a fireplace down there. It looks downright cozy.
Nice wainscoting on the wall, by the way.
It's he's got the more traditional wood paneled man cave type thing.
Yeah.
You know, with the windows. It's probably just downright wonderful at Christmas, when it's snowing outside.
Maybe there's room for a small tree down there as well.
It's very whimsical.
It's not the main tree, but a secondary tree.
And it is weird to think of him just sitting there on Sundays watching football. Like he was like, yeah, this is my chair. I watch football every weekend sitting right there. Yeah. And it's just odd because you never really think about it. It's like, what does Roger Goodell do for NFL football on Sunday? Well, the answer is he's usually sitting down in his basement just like you and I, which is funny to think about because
sometimes
you never really think about it.
Go to the games.
There are times, but I mean,
he's got a nice pub table there.
He's got to have a day off at some point.
And a couch, if you will. It's
all right.
Maybe it's a love seat.
It's all right. I feel like we didn't see all of it.
Well, I mean, it looks like it. I mean, because they kind of give you the 360 view. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, but it looks like there are some hallways or some doors or some spaces that we didn't get to see.
Oh, well, sure. Back the other direction. That's true.
Or to the side.
Yeah.
And he's got three screens that he watches football on. And then they showed where he's going to be standing. It looks like he's going to be just like right in the corner in front of a bookcase. So, again, we'll get to study what kind of books he thinks are important because he'll definitely move the right books to be behind him in the shot. I'm excited.
It is all about the books.
It's all about the books.
And Goodell, I feel like he is the sort that will have read the books. I do. I feel that.
Probably.
Well, he's an attorney, right?
Is he?
I think.
What did he do as a young guy?
I think he's an attorney.
Okay.
I think he has that useless attorney sort of look about him.
Roger Goodell.
And I do believe that he has read. And by the way, I'll give him credit. There's only a handful of books from what we saw. It's not like he's got some sort of like a pretentious setup.
Right.
I think
it's not like a law office.
No. I was happy with it.
It was good.
I came away giving it two thumbs up. It's not Eddie Vedder.
No.
But I give it two thumbs up.
You know what it is? It's a little dated. Like you can tell he's lived. I don't know how long he's lived there. It seems like he's lived there for a while. It's like old white guy, khaki pants.
Sure. That's a good comp there is that if you were going to film a Dockers commercial, remember all those Dockers commercials where they're just at like ass level and it was dudes like doing something very bro-y and for whatever reason, we just showed them from the waist down. And it was like, ha ha, we're men. I feel like that could have been filmed down in Goodell's basement, right? There's some sort of strange, wealthy white guy activity going on down there. I'm not going to say like bird masks or anything, but you know, there's some sort of weird... you're deciding the fates of lesser people in that basement. I firmly believe that.
Do you know what his middle name is?
I do not.
Stoko.
Stoko?
That's his middle name.
Roger Stoko Goodell?
Yeah. Stokoe.
Hmm.
Stoko.
It's quite... I don't know if
Stoko.
I've
ever...
You know he was an intern at the NFL as well?
No, but is he an attorney? Do we know, or is he just...
He was a three-sport athlete.
Oh.
Captained all three teams as a senior in high school.
Well, where did he go to college?
Bronx.
Some fancy...
Ah, look at this.
What do we got?
Injuries kept him from playing college football.
Uh-huh. We just got done saying, like a week ago, stop with that. Stop with that narrative. It's horse crap.
He's not an attorney. He was. He went to Washington and Jefferson College in Washington, Pennsylvania, and his degree is in economics.
Okay.
And then he was an intern. He started at the NFL in 1982. He was an intern under Pete Rozelle.
He's a lifer, huh?
Yeah, and he's now the commissioner. Yes. Pretty much.
Hey, but the only reason why he didn't go on and play is all those horrific injuries in high school.
So he graduated college in 1981. He began interning under Pete Rozelle in 1982, and he is now NFL commissioner. That's amazing.
Well, I mean, that's like when you get that guy that like starts the Costco CEO, right?
He makes like $50 million a year.
I know. The guy that owns, not doesn't own, but the CEO, the president of Costco, that's same thing. Like he like got out of high school and just started working, like pushing carts. Then he moved up to like, I don't know, selling hot dogs or whatever. And here we are 30 years later. And the guy's the freaking CEO. Those stories are great. You know, when you see someone that actually just kind of starts at the bottom and, you know, granted, I don't think, you know, many people like Roger Goodell, but respect the fact that the guy didn't have anything handed to him. He earned it.
And he married Jane Skinner, too.
I don't know who that is.
She was on Fox News.
Oh.
She was a host back in the day. She's a hot.
It's power couple.
She's hot. They are definitely a power couple. Fascinating.
Someone asking if the Illuminati has been down in Goodell's basement. Yes, I think so.
There have been meetings.
Yeah. What is that? Is it down there? Bilderbergs or whatever? I'm assuming that he's part of any sort of like secret evil society. I mean, he's
probably always in his basement.
Wait,
always watching.
Can I make an amendment to this?
Yes, absolutely.
I believe that if there's any high level corruption type meeting and at Goodell's house,
and I'd like to believe that there is,
they do a dinner, like a fancy dinner.
Ooh.
Or if they meet for business, they go into his office. I think the basement is for scotch afterwards. The basement is when the deals are done.
Yes. Party downstairs.
Yes. That's what I think. I don't think it's the basement. He wouldn't show us that.
No, you're right on that. The Illuminati is meeting upstairs, and then we're talking fancy dining room and very high back chairs.
Yes.
And a lot of aggressive coloring, like red leather chairs. Something, you know, like a big stag head over a fireplace, you know, where lives are, you know, are made and broken in that room. And then you're right. Then you head down to the basement for the cigars and the brown.
Yep.
You're on to something.
You're listening to a best of edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk here on 1080 The Fan. We have more best of segments coming up. But first, here's Joe with sports.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in a best of edition of Primetime today on a Friday. Here we get into some hot jersey talk. You can also hear my infamous I prefer the whites quote peppered throughout this one. Of course, I was talking about white jerseys, but that's not how we use it. Why? Because Lynch is a bastard. But we do get to talk about in this segment the best NBA uniforms of all time, and that spirals into what I believe, and I still, in my heart of hearts, the worst uniform in sports history were the 1999-2000 BYU Cougar bib jerseys. And I'd like to once again apologize to Canby High School, who apparently got those after my school refused to wear them after the 1 year. So hot uniform and jersey talk, and of course the white power rankings on this segment of a best of edition of Primetime.
You know what the worst jersey was? Because they didn't do a top 74 worst jerseys, they did a top 10.
And top 10? Well, it should be the dinosaur jerseys from the Raptors, but...
Well, here's the thing about the top 10 of the worst. It's kind of a lame list because they're all, like, alternate jerseys.
Yeah.
You know, because there's some really bad alternates.
Sure.
So there were very few. As a matter of fact, I think there were only two or three regular jerseys that a team wore. One of them was, that was on the top 10, I don't remember where, was the Clippers in 2015, 16, and 17. They had a red jersey that just had the C and the number on each nipple.
Yeah, that's the one that was like high up on the chest.
Yeah, and they were equal size. That's a horrible jersey.
I remember
that was on there. But the number one jersey, and they're not wrong about this, the number one worst jersey that they ranked, and I don't know if you guys remember these, but it was the Sacramento Kings gold alternates. Do you remember when they wore gold? And think Mike Bibby.
Mike Bibby.
2005, 2006, they wore them for a year, and they are hideous.
Yeah, I kind of remember those. I need a refresher course, but I do. Yeah, I briefly remember
those
that.
Are disgusting.
The worst. They look like.
You would think purple and gold together would look good. It doesn't.
Think like you know those Hammer pants. Remember the MC Hammer pants?
Yeah.
He had the gold sparkly. That's kind of what they look like.
It looks like a pajama top.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like something that you'd see like was that Kazam? Shaquille O'Neal wore those while playing the genie.
Yeah. That's bad.
I'm scrolling through.
They are
through
very glimmery.
I'm scrolling through the list of the 74 top jerseys. And
The Blazers got a little hosed.
I think they, of the ones that I think are grossly misnumbered, I think Portland got it worse than now, just about anybody.
Would we be saying that if we didn't live here?
Yeah.
And follow them?
I think the Blazers just have good looking stuff. The fact that you put the Utah Purple Mountains, which, by the way, I was in Utah when they were wearing those.
I just have always preferred the whites.
And I'm here to tell you that even the people in Utah during the time, and that was the Jordan final shot,
yeah,
hated those. If you showed up to the, if you showed up to a Jazz game, you saw way more of the old Jazz jerseys than you did those crappy mountain ones.
The comments on both that one as well as the Raptors one, which they ranked pretty high, the original Dinos with the pinstripes, said that these were widely panned when they first came out, but have become beloved by all NBA fans.
Stupid. Oh, for heaven's sake.
Not true.
That's what they both say. It's, they are now among the most popular jerseys.
I'm just here to tell you, having been in Utah during that era, their own fans hated them.
Just the middleman. Don't shoot the messenger.
Mike, I'm going to shoot you. No, I won't.
I like the Dino jerseys, but
I would never do that.
See, this is near and dear to my heart because I went through this.
What?
I think BYU, and look, I'm...
Uh-oh.
I'm not biased here because anyone that listens to the program, like I do not sit up here and randomly praise BYU. Far from it.
OP.
Their uniforms are some of the best in college football.
Yeah, they're good.
They are awesome.
You know what? You know what the common theme?
Although, was it there that you had to wear the midriff bearing?
So this is my point why I said the uniform thing is near dear to my heart. So when I went there with the Royal Blues, with the white helmets and the stretch Y. And I was fired up to put that on. Like, those were great. Even when we went with the all-whites, the Stormtroopers loved it. I was so happy to get there and to see my uniform and put it on for the first time. I loved that. And after my second year, those sons of bitches, not only did they change the color from the iconic BYU blue, not only did they get rid of the iconic stretch Y and the oval on the helmet. No, no, no. They gave us a completely different color scheme, which was awful navy blue and poo brown, and they put us in effing bibs.
Yep.
I contend.
Oregon State wore those too.
They wore sports bras, which were bad.
Oh, these are different?
I contend, if you look up the BYU bib uniform, I think that's the worst uniform in college football history.
Jeez.
And I was forced to wear it.
Easy.
Yes. Find me a look.
So what do I type in here to Google?
BYU football bib uniforms.
Bib uniform.
Bib.
Okay.
And tell me if there you can find a uniform in college football that was worse than that.
Ooh.
And not only did we have to wear that.
You are right.
Realize that we went from one of the best looking uniforms to that. Someone at Nike convinced BYU that what they were wearing wasn't good,
fella,
and we needed to wear that.
Fella, that is, I can't argue with you. That is horrible.
So it looks like the reason it's called the bib uniform is because there's a white patch that is only basically up to the top of the stomach, and then everything else is dark blue.
Yeah, it looks like you're sitting at a high chair and your mom's feeding you a little mac and cheese.
Yep. The first game that we had to wear those was
because they match exactly the pants, which is very confusing.
Yeah.
The first, that's the only white.
The first game that we played them in was against some, you know, I don't know, horse crap lower team or whatever, and we were kicking their ass. And the guy that I was playing just looked at me and said, dude, you guys may be kicking our ass, but you have to wear those so you lose. And he was right. I had no comeback. I just turned around and walked back to the huddle. When they unveiled those at the team meeting, oh my God, you would have thought that just people were ready to riot. Like Lavelle Edwards had to come out and tell us to stop because like the Nike rep was there and people were just audibly booing and were livid.
Here is the blurb I found on the bibs. This is just from, I'm assuming, a BYU fan or student or something. I'm not going to lie, 11-year-old me really liked the bibs, not necessarily for the style, but for the fact that BYU was a top priority by Nike to do some innovation. Only BYU and the Denver Broncos were using New Jersey materials that were more breathable for athletes. But by the end of the day, these navy blue Vegas tan and white bib jerseys were out of control.
Those are awful.
They only lasted for 1 year. So
yeah, and that, I think Oregon State only played with the sports bras for
like
1 year. And if you go look at those, they are those are hideous too. It looks like they're... The uniforms are okay, color, you know, this color scheme and everything, normal. But then it just looks like they have little sports bras not covering their nips.
Back in the day now.
And yet they're better than what
they
had to wear.
That's right. They are better. If I had to rank the two, I would say the sports bra is slightly better than yours.
So I,
that's horrible.
I will put it out there for anyone to find me a worse uniform than what I was forced to wear at BYU.
The only thing I can think of is like, if you just don't like poop brown, those Wyoming jerseys are just hideous.
Yeah, they're not good.
But other than that, I can't think of one. I love, so what you were saying about BYU's look. Oh, mm-hmm. Well, Maryland, remember when Maryland did the Under Armour? Yeah, like,
they tried to be the Ducks.
Dude,
the Under
those
Armour
were
group.
Awful.
Yep, still better than what I had to wear, but yes, they were horrible.
You think so? I think those rival what you had to wear.
They're pretty close.
They had like, I'm looking at them here. They were the red and white, but then like a shoulder pad and half of the helmet was black and yellow.
They made it try to look like the Maryland state flag.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Ah, what a mistake. Anyway, I love, well, you were talking about the BYU look.
Oh, it looks
and
great.
I think that the in Oregon's got some of the best look in college football, but that's more of like the modern look.
Yep.
I think the classic college football is always better when it's simpler, which is why Penn State is clearly one of the top looks. Michigan is one of the top looks.
USC has
USC,
a classic great look.
And
Texas.
They don't mess with it too much.
Nope.
And that I think that's great about college football. The one in that category, though, that I've always just kind of thought was meh is Notre Dame.
You don't like Notre Dame, huh?
Not really.
I've always been a fan.
Not really.
Yeah, I like Notre Dame's. Especially now they do like the shiny gold. It's different. Like it sparkles. Big fan of what, especially when they do the alternate greens, like they break them out for the USC game. I understand.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I can do it.
I just have always preferred the whites.
You're listening to a best of edition of Primetime here on 1080 The Fan. More for you after the break.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back into this best of edition of Prime Time here on 1080 The Fan. Still to come on the show today, we have yet another conversation coming up next based on party fouls or faux pas, if you will, like we did to open up this hour. Souk rants about Jordan Love's draft pick. We have a really epic fail at being good sports radio hosts in the 5 o'clock hour, as well as hot haberdashery talk. Basically, we're doing a lot of loosey-goosey stuff on this best of as a COVID cast best of. But this segment is one of those that just kind of pops up in the middle of nowhere, and I actually will credit myself for starting this because Souk on Twitter talked about a cereal combination that he made. And then I posed a question, a very important question that led to a conversation of what are good cereal combinations to make? That is right here on this best of edition of Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
And what am I to say? I had a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Cinnamon Life today mixed together. It was unbelievable.
That sounds delightful.
I do. I feel like I should win some sort of award for like peace in the field of breakfastry. Like I don't normally eat cereal. But I came down today and I was feeling a bowl of cereal and I was debating between the two and I went, whoa, 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 bowl cinnamon and sugar, mix them together. I created a super cereal. That's what I did. I mean, I'm sure those guys working on the virus, they're important too, but me, I'm doing important research as well.
What would be the best cereal combination?
Well, I can't believe we've never asked this question.
I know, because it's not going to be the two cinnamons.
No,
I mean
just, that's just kind of like probably a very similar flavor.
Yeah, I just enhanced the cinnamon.
It's just textures.
I enhanced the cinnamon flavor. What you need to do is combine, you know, a couple different things.
Because the Cinnamon Toast Crunch is kind of like light and flaky, and the Life is usually thicker and more substantial. So you probably had good texture balance.
It was good. The milk at the bottom was simply delightful.
What would be the best cereal combination?
Ooh. I don't know. Honestly, I think that's the first time I've combined cereals.
Really?
Yeah, I don't
know. I've done it before.
I've done it. End of boxes.
Yeah, when you get the little boxes, like when you go on vacation, you bring like the 50 little boxes, you combine those two. Like I've combined like Fruit Loops and Apple Jacks before. I mean, that's not anything special, but I've combined them. There's already some good combinations. Like Reese's Puffs is delightful.
Sure.
But like, that's already like a combination.
Well, Captain Crunch with Crunch Berries. I mean, that's
I'm thinking Fruity Pebbles with something.
Well, someone just threw out Golden Grahams and Cocoa Puffs. And I'm saying, what if I took the Cocoa Puffs away, but you brought me the Golden Grahams and I used Cocoa Krispies or Fruity Pebbles and Golden Grahams?
Or Golden Grahams with Lucky Charms, because then you get the graham cracker and the marshmallow.
That's good.
Interesting.
That's good.
can you add Cocoa Puffs to that and you get a s'more?
Look, I think the bottom
Cocoa
line
Puffs,
is
Lucky Charms, Golden Grahams.
I need to go to the store this weekend, buy the variety pack, and then Dr. Jason needs to go into his lab and conduct some experiments this weekend.
This is important. I feel like you should do this.
Yeah.
Now, I think Frosted Flakes could be a good base as well.
Yeah.
Simple and sweet and crispy.
Frosted Flakes combined with something could
what
be.
What if you did Frosted Flakes and Fruity Pebbles? What do you guys feel about that?
Boy, I'm telling you right now, I'm a little excited about this.
This
it's
is great. Like,
and
like
it's not these wasabi nuts.
No, the research is early in the phase, but I'll tell you what, the prelims of this, I'm excited about the possibility.
Ooh, Honey Bunches of Oats, that's a good one too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Again, I think it's about the you need like a crunch and it's like a sweet savory sort
There's
of thing.
There's also the like less popular ones like Crave is a really good cereal, but it's a sweet like chocolate filled puff.
Never heard of it.
And I wonder if that would go well with something because those are really good, but. You can't just go with the basics. You really got to go deep.
Yeah, you got to explore the cereal world, the studio space. Now, I will tell you that once while camping and being way overserved.
I hate that on campouts.
Yeah, gets a little,
It happens.
Yeah, you're like, hey, who's being responsible for this? Like someone allowed me to get to this point. I did. I was drinking a White Russian and I put Captain Crunch in it, like with the crunch berries, and I ate my alcohol. I'll tell you what.
Oh, my God, that sounds amazing.
And I don't know if it was the fact of the overserve or in that moment, but I'll tell you what.
Delightful.
I don't know if I've ever been happier camping in my life when I developed a new alcohol delivery system, eating of the alcohol. It was magical.
This text says Apple Jacks and Cinnamon Toast Crunch would create an apple pie, even though Apple Jacks don't really taste like apples. But
that would be good.
I think in theory they're supposed to taste
like apples.
That
makes sense.
Yeah, why do Apple Jacks not taste anything like apples?
Because I don't think they're actually apple flavored.
What about Grape Nuts and Trix?
Nothing can make Grape Nuts good. Nothing.
You don't like Grape Nuts?
Grape Nuts aren't bad.
I think they're good. And you just got to put fruit in it.
And I'd also like to stand by my statement that no one has ever finished an entire bowl of Grape Nuts. It just keeps going. It's like an everlasting gobstopper. You can be eating Grape Nuts for like 45 minutes, look down, and you haven't even dented the bowl.
Have you ever put beer with your beer in your cereal?
No.
Like a college heathen?
No, I have not.
That does not sound good.
Yeah, we did that a long time ago.
Bad, good?
Oh, it's terrible.
Okay.
But,
Could you pour like a chocolate stout in and then maybe get some good flavors that way?
Yeah, you could.
I'm imagining you poured like...
No, it was like Milwaukee. Natural Light.
Yeah.
Come on, babe.
Natty Light with some Grape Nuts. And I'm hoping...
How about apple cinnamon Cheerios and Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
See, there you go. Because that may you actually get some...
Apple pie.
Yeah, some apple pie flavor. And I hope
you put a scoop of ice cream in there too.
I hope when you did the beer cereal that you ate it out of like a frisbee or something. Like not a bowl or some sort of like chafing dish or something. Like not a I meant to do this sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's
that's
just
like
a receptacle that you found.
The only thing that goes with a frisbee and a bong rip.
Yes. It just kind of goes hand in hand.
Kind of like from the movies.
Yeah, there's a dog with a bandana on it somewhere. You know.
There's some tie dye.
Sure.
You're listening to a best of edition of Primetime here on 1080 The Fan. More for you after the break.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.